Hi there. Somebody cutting the grass.
And I've got a bee and all, so.
They notice it. There's Jane Beccari. She's getting her headphones on.
Even though she doesn't know it, she's here.
Good day, mate. How are you?
All good, aye, all good.
It's good to have a Geordie in with us, it's nice.
A Geordie.
Paul.
Yes.
Congratulations on your new album. It's fantastic.
My new album, which would be...
The River, that you did on Apple Music, iTunes, Amazon, Spotify. It's all the piano music.
Oh, yeah. I don't let you talk about it, Dave.
No. Oh, shite. No, it's me. I did it. I wasn't mean to bring that up, that it's on Apple Music, iTunes, Spotify, and...
Dave, you know. Is it on foodopolis.org as well?
Actually, shortly, there will be some recipes with tracks from that. Every time I use my music on the recipes, I then get a restraint thing from YouTube saying you're using copyrighted material. And I've got to go through the same thing every time to write to my publishers and say, it's my site, it's my music, I'll do what I want with it.
They're my vegetables, it's my knives.
My aubergine.
That's track two, isn't it?
My aubergine emoji is track two. Are you pretending to speak, Mark?
No, I can see you mouthing, can you hear me now? But I can't hear you. Oh, I can't hear you.
Every single
Why
week
is this?
There's something.
Every, and without fail.
It's almost like, Paul,
We're
unlucky.
Indeed. Very much so.
You could say that, though, to be fair, it'd be number 13. If this didn't happen every single week.
Exactly.
You going to speak,
right, Mark? Mouth.
That.
Hey! Oh.
There
back in the room.
Oh, he's away again. He's away again, everybody. This is magic.
Look how confused he is. What's that? But is that, oh, he's in bed as well now. James Crivens.
Am I not working?
Yes, of course it's working.
Here we go.
Is that me now, yeah?
Yes.
That's you back.
Well, he's got album note covers on that album. It says, if music be the foodopolis.org of love.
God, we waited for that, Mark.
This lovely subject this week is Paul's idea, but I did hear a rumour that Jane Beccari was ganting to introduce it.
Yes.
I may have been privy to a practice run.
Well.
No pressure.
Are we ready, boys?
Go for yes. it.
I'm doing it. Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 13, Unlucky for Some. Ooh. Ooh.
Same noise after every introduction.
Yeah.
Aye. It's the same noise.
It's about
four people who are very easily impressed. Of course, everyone knows that we have the podcast theme tune available as a ringtone on iTunes.
Yes. Well
That's
done.
That's very exciting, David. I'm going to get that.
I'm going to get it as well. Do you need to pay for it?
Of course you do.
And does the money go to you, Dave?
Yes.
Did we split the money?
Did you write any of it?
Honest to God, man. What a shyster.
Unlucky for some. What's this? What are we doing?
Well, we're going to talk about Triskaidekaphobia.
Oh, homework.
I got it in first.
I can take the boat out of Milton.
Exactly. And it's everything connected with the number 13 and the fear of the number 13, whether it brings good luck or bad luck, we just don't know, and stories related to that.
I'd like to say, are we superstitious? Right, so I'm going to say David Goodall, no. Paul Riley, yes. Mark Cox, no.
In so much as when I left home at 19 or something, I realised my entire life my mother had been... pairing my socks and balling my socks, right? And I thought, wow, that's terrible. And so I spoke to her about it and I says, no, I'm not doing that. I'm going to wear odd socks for the rest of my life. And even the day I was married, I was wearing odd socks. Is that a kind of superstition? I don't know.
That's laziness rather than superstition.
All of our beliefs really boil down to laziness. Let's be honest.
It all goes back to laziness, especially Mark Cox. Look at you.
I know. But it comes down to when does superstition actually get caught up just with what you've done all your days. Yeah. When you're growing up, my mum would say to me, don't walk under that ladder.
Aye.
I haven't really given it any thought, but I wouldn't walk under a ladder by choice, actually. Uh-huh. And I'm not really that superstitious, just in case.
Something could genuinely hit you in the head.
Yeah, I mean, that's like saying I'm superstitious about always crossing when the green man's showing. There's certain things that make sense to do.
Would you whistle backstage?
No.
Would you learn your lines backstage?
Probably.
Jane would.
Yeah. But a lot of actors would never whistle in the wings. That would be bad luck.
Why don't you whistle in the wings, Jane?
You don't whistle because it used to be sailors that would work the ropes.
Well,
you see?
Yeah.
So they would signal each other with different whistles. It's a safety thing.
That's actually not true.
Oh, David.
Oh, David, here we go.
The reason people don't whistle backstage was originally, quite a long time ago, theatre was run by the clangers.
Oh, really?
Yeah, a lot of their notes and communication, obviously, you go...
Aye, right.
And that's why you don't do it. Tom Cruise got a lot of trouble with that.
That's why they lost the Smash adverts, wasn't it?
That's right.
And obviously people would know theatrically... You're never supposed to mention Shakespeare's top seller.
Macbeth.
For some reason, because it was bloody, I suppose. Is a
no, I know the reason.
It's because when you say Macbeth, a seagull shows up out of nowhere.
Well, it's because in the old days, if you were touring and the show was dying in its arse and nobody was coming, they would do Macbeth to get people in. So if somebody said, I think we should do Macbeth, that's because your show was dying. So people would say, well, don't say Macbeth because your show is dying its arse.
That's where we're going to end up, Jane.
It was written for King James, and it was written the way it was written because James reckoned he was a descendant of Malcolm Canmore. And one of his ladies-in-waiting was, in fact, a descendant of Gruach MacVaha, the wife of Macbeth, King MacVaha. And apparently she cursed the play.
Is that true, David?
Yes, that is true. Apparently. I think your reason is the reason. But the play has had a whole load of stuff around it. The reason it's so heavy on witches is because James had just written a book on demons and demonology and basically said, write me a play that slags off King MacVaha and... get some sales of my book.
Ah.
Shakespeare was nothing if not the Hoare of Stratford.
Jimmy Page bought that house up in Loch Ness, right on the banks, because Aleister Crowley owned it.
Oh, God, yes.
I can't remember the name of it, but it's right on the banks of Loch Ness. Apparently, it's got a pentagram in the basement, and it's a Norwegian family that own it.
Well, hopefully, they're listening in and they've found a pentagram.
Yes. G'day, creepy people.
Well, they said that in a witch's coven, there would be 13 members. So that was another reason why, number 13 wasn't good.
The reason they've taken the 13 witches is because there were 13 people round the Last Supper table.
Yes. That was another one.
But it's also alleged it's from Norse mythology. That 12 jumped to Valhalla.
Great album.
Isn't it though? And one of them never bothered, so there was a...
What is that thing with the 12 Vikings of Valhalla? One little Viking went to... Is that what that is?
Fact check!
According to Norse mythology, 12 gods held a feast in Valhalla. The trickster god Loki arrived as a 13th guest, and in revenge for not having been invited, tricked Hodur into shooting Baldur with a mistletoe-tipped arrow. The tale tells us Baldur died and the whole earth got dark. The whole earth mourned. It was a bad, unlucky day. This is thought to be the origin in Norse mythology of the number 13 being unlucky. In some countries, France, China and Italy, 13 is lucky.
Ah.
And in Tai Chi, the postures 8 gates and 5 steps totals 13 to make up all the forms.
When is 13 not particularly good news and not particularly bad news? I'll tell you. If you're sentenced in this country to 13 years, you'll probably only do 6.5.
There we are.
So it's not,
that's
all bad.
Very good. And see, in the countries where it's lucky, you know, if you go to a hotel or a hospital, there isn't a room number 13. So what if you're in Italy then? There is a room number 13?
Yes, but in China, there's no fourth floor.
But what if you are on the fourth floor and there's a fire?
Well, then you're shit out of luck, because in Chinese, the word for four sounds like the word for death.
Oft.
Four is si, and death is si. Apologies to Chinese listeners. In Italy now, but also in Rome, the number 17 was thought to be unlucky.
Oh.
Because the numbers in Roman are XVII, which when they duke it about means vixi. This is Latin for I lived, so...
You're already away.
Here's another one, right?
Go for it.
Now, you're all going to count the letters in your name. If you've got 13 letters in your name, it means that you're cursed So I want everybody listening to count the letters in their name. So you've got people like Charles Manson, Jack the Ripper, and Theodore Bundy.
Theodore Bundy. Theodore Bundy. Stretching that one, aren't you?
Because people say Adolf Hitler. No, no, but it was Adolphus Hitler. That was his proper name.
But you raise an interesting point, and I think Mark would be on board with this. It's like when people say, oh, I was just thinking about Auntie Ethel and she phoned. You don't take stock of the number of people who don't have 13 letters in their names who killed tons of folk, the number who do, who didn't kill tons of folk. You don't think of the times you thought of Auntie Ethel and she didn't phone.
Nah.
We're drawn to the coincidence of things, and we our brain blanks out the fact it's happened hundreds of times before with nothing happening.
Yeah. That's next week's guest, right?
Adolphus Theodore.
Theodore Bundy.
He has ruined the name Adolf, hasn't he? He's ruined the name Adolf and he's ruined that moustache. Fact check! Without going into too much detail on this, Jack the Ripper is not a real name. Were it a real name, then the is a middle name, so middle names apply. And Adolphus is an original name, so original names apply. So Theodore Robert Bundy and Charles Miles Manson don't work.
It's not just like the number 13, it's feeling lucky sometimes. Sometimes I feel really, really, really lucky, but still nothing good happens.
Generally in the waltzers.
Dear. Mm-hmm. Do you know, like, so I try and will myself, like, so say I was to win a raffle and I really want to win, and I say to myself, I'm going to win this, I'm going to visualise it, I'm going to believe in it, I'm going to feel lucky.
It's interesting you mentioned raffle. When I was at the drama college in Edinburgh, I remember feeling quite lucky, and it was regards to a raffle happening in the Union. And I went, I bought my ticket, and I was drunk, and I'm back to my halls of residence, and my pal Dougie next door come up, chaps the door, you've won a Walkman at the time. Walkman. Yes, I knew it. And we both walked back or ran back to the Union. By the time I get down there, and then, oh, because you weren't here, we drew another ticket.
I've got a story of both good and bad luck that involves me. 10 years ago, something like that, they had a link up with all the bingo halls in the whole of the UK, and it was the first time anybody could win £1 million at the bingo. And the very first winner in the UK was in Paisley. And they asked me to go and hand over the cheque. The next month, the second person to win it was in Parkhead at the Forge. And they asked me again, will you come and present the cheque? But what happened was, the people said for the £1 million, whoever wins this will split it. And it was a family. And sure enough, they won the £1 million. And the woman who won, she said, oh, I never said that. And the whole thing went belly up and it made the newspapers and everything. And I never got to present the cheque and never got paid or anything.
Triskaidekaphobia. Another possibility is on Friday the 13th of October, 1307, Philip IV of France ordered the arrest of the Knights Templar, most of whom were tortured and killed. So Friday the 13th then became a very much a bad luck thing.
Right. Then it became a movie based on that.
What Philip would do, he would wear a hockey mask.
Oh, I see.
And then he would just stalk the Knights Templar, generally when they were taking drugs or having sex. A keg party.
A keg party, yeah. Tailgate party.
Yeah.
Talking about the bingo, I've taken all the numbers from 1 to 90. So if at any point you feel that you want to find out what the numbers mean, then just feel free to chip in. I'll go easy on you, right, because there's some belters in here. This is a room full of pensioners, obviously, right? The caller will go 53 and they all shout, here comes Herbie!
Only in Manchester, surely, or something.
Aye, well, aye. 50, they all shout 50, 50.
Blind.
It's off to what we go.
No!
Here's a belter for you, Jane, right? A room full of pensioners, don't forget. 6 and 9, 69. They all shout, a favourite of mine.
Oh.
So here, folks, I'm not.
But I'll tell you this, you better not laugh and you better not be carrying on if you're at the bingo because, very strict.
Hardcore.
Why? Eyes down, that's it.
We were touring a production of The Life of Robert Burns and we got booked into a bingo hall, unbeknownst to us. They come very early. It's a 1,000-seater.
And we
started the show and there was about 5 people at the front watching the show. And as the 40 minutes of the show wore on, it was repeated constantly. People would come in, shouting down, what's this? Some play. When's the bingo starting? After 1,000 people, round about half of them had that same conversation. It got to the point where at the end, the guy playing Burns said, Robert Burns was dead. The bingo could begin.
Yay!
I remember going to the bingo with Chris McLaughlin between shows one time, and we're in Perth, and the atmosphere was as tense as could be. Mm. And I was embarrassed because I only had the one dauber, but there was a woman sitting at either side of me,
daubers, yeah.
18 books. Blah, 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 blah. It was impossible.
Do you remember we filmed Still Game in Canada? I went to Vegas to meet Ford and Greg. For a laugh, I drew up a sign that just said two daubers on it, waiting for them to come off the plane. This limo driver came up to me and he said, excuse me, are you waiting for bingo players? It's just two daubers, don't worry.
A similar good luck in Thailand is called the Palad Keek, and it's a fake penis you wear in your trousers, which brings you luck at games and fighting.
Oh. And swingers parties.
There's a large statue in Croatia, in Split. You rub its foot for luck, and the foot's all worn away.
Well, you rub the balls in Wall Street of the Bull.
What to notice here, ladies and gentlemen, is that Paul is miming rubbing the balls of the bull.
I'm not particularly superstitious, but I have a lucky bean right beside me in this drawer. I do. My cousin Pat gave me it when I was maybe 6, and I've kept it all my life. My lucky bean. That's it.
Break a leg. The other thing that you might say in Italian is in culo alla balena, in the whale's arse.
I thought break a leg was a Cosa Nostra greeting.
I thought in Italy they said Elaine Page, no?
They don't. They say in Bocca Lupo, in the wolf's mouth, but in the whale's arse is also one. Elaine Page is used as a threat in many Western European countries.
Break a leg!
So, why do we say break a leg then? Just because you can't say good luck, hope it goes well?
Well, that's interesting. There's a lot of theories about things like breaking a leg, as in to bend at the knee to bow, or to break the leg of the stage when you come forward. But in actual fact, they're all rubbish. One of the traditions is it's generally thought to be bad luck to wish someone good luck. So you wish them something bad, like in the mouth of the wolf, or up the whale's arse, or we say break a leg. The Germans say Hals und Bein brauche, which is neck and leg broken.
Oofed.
Why is that bad luck? That's nonsensical.
But the whole thing's nonsensical. You know, you see a magpie and you salute it and speak to it. Getty.
I do that.
I know you do. It's mindless. It takes us back to the days when if there was an eclipse, we'd all start stabbing the nearest person because they must have brought it on.
That's true.
But also as well, sometimes you don't want to tempt fate. When the teachers gave their kind of estimated grades for kids, and Alexander, who's my youngest, he was getting passes. And I thought, oh, thank you, thank you, thank you. And then my cousin Pat sent him 30, the same girl that gave me the lucky bean, 1975. She sent him £30 in a card. So he's had that card up for months. But then the night before the actual results came out, he said to me, Mum, hide that card away because it might tempt fate in case I fail. And I laughed and he went, no, no, really, Mum, put the card away. A card in a drawer. Oh, yeah, that's long gone.
That wasn't part of the whole good luck, bad luck thing. If that was fair game.
Long spig.
That was a new toaster.
Aye.
Aye. But you wouldn't want to tempt fate. So what difference is that going to make?
Well, I don't think it makes a difference at all, but it's what keeps people content. Like, if you really think that you are simply, one, responsible for all your own actions, and two, you're at the mercy of the vagaries of the wind of fate, it's far easier to believe, oh, if I stuff this magpie and my bean in my trousers and keep them, I'll have good luck, because it makes you feel you have some level of control.
Yeah, possibly.
When in fact, folks, we don't.
And there's hope. If I was worried, I would pray.
Well, that's a different thing we're getting into, because I probably don't mind that either, but it's self-prophesizing, isn't it? If you see a magpie, one for sorrow, two for joy. And you see two...
golden rings.
That's right. You see two, and then you get a check through the door, or your exam results are fantastic, but you're really just adding things together, aren't you?
That's what I mean about the anti-ethylphonin. Your exam results would have been fantastic whether you saw a magpie or not, unless Gavin Williamson or John Swinney were involved, in which case they'd obviously mark you doing three grades because they're incompetent gits.
Yeah.
It's just come back to me, Dave. Burlesquing House on Loch Ness.
Yeah.
Just in case you want to drop that in.
Yeah.
My favourite thing growing up, and I still love them, would be Tales of the Unexpected. It just gives you a wee twist and a wee chill. But that's my cup of tea. Yeah.
Mild Menace.
Mild menace and vague sexual references from the start. That's what I like to hear from a programme when it comes on.
Hammer House of Horror. I remember one that was everything in its place and a place for everything. And she just dismembered the husband and put everything in jars. And she went, there you are. How do you like them apples?
A 300 quid budget every episode.
Yep. Oh, aye. Do you remember there was one that was a skeleton fell into some water and then the skeleton grew flesh and then it became human and then it was all pish.
House of Wax gave me the willies. Oh, chilled me to the bone, that. That says back to... We're always talking spooky things.
Take us back to I don't know, the topic. do you know, in Russia, if a bird shites on you, it means you're going to come into money.
Nice.
And if you get multiple bird shites on you, you're going to have multiple amounts of cash.
You would live in a do loft.
Yeah.
Well, you would. But if something like that happens, it's nice to feel that you're going to get some good luck. Whether you do or you don't, while you're cleaning the jobby out your shoe or scrubbing the jobby off your jacket, it's nice to think this is going to be worth it because soon I'm going to come into money.
I think it's perspective. A lot of things about luck, and I'm not being cynical. As you know, I'm quite a positive fellow. I think you have a choice. If you get some money and you get a flat tyre, you've got a choice. You can say, God, every time I get some spare cash, I get a bloody flat tyre. Or you can say, every time I get a flat tyre, spare cash is there to cover it. It's your choice how you look at that, whether it's bad luck or good luck.
It is perspective, of course it is. Cameron and Jack, my good friend in London, said the guy he goes to the gym with believes wholeheartedly if he wants something and he visualises it, it will come to him.
And that's nice and it keeps you positive, but in many ways, I think the exercise would be to be positive without thinking there's a goal at the end of it.
David, do you believe what goes around comes around? And I don't mean with anything financially, I just mean an energy between people and doing good.
I don't believe any of that. I think you should just do good because it's the thing to do, not because it will come back and serve you well. I think that we go through life. It sounds terribly depressing, but I'm actually very optimistic and I love my life. We go through life, we are not in control of anything other than what we do.
Hey.
And to learn that is a useful thing because it stops you being frustrated and upset when you think, if I can't control things, why should I worry about them?
Yep.
But I am responsible. If I do bad things, the devil didn't make me do them. I did them.
Yeah, for sure. Be good, do good things. That's it. And see.
Well, I remember a friend, Audrey, who was at drama school with us. And when she was about maybe 8 or 9, she was at Butlins and she was in the talent competition. So there was a clapometer. So Audrey did comedy. So she was right at the top, 10 in the clapometer. And then just at the last gasp, a wee girl in a wheelchair came on and sang Edelweiss. Right past the number 10. So Audrey decided she would make her own luck. So she took the girl and locked her in a cupboard. So when the prize was given out, they couldn't find her. And Audrey said, I think she maybe went back to the chalet. So that was it. Audrey got the prize, a big cup, hey, chocolate, everything. Yay, the winner. And just quietly opened the cupboard on the way back to her chalet. So maybe you make your own luck, is what I'm saying.
No, I think that's actually called false imprisonment, kidnapping. That's not making your own luck, that's an offence. Here's a question for you. This being about luck this week, what are the chances that we will finally find out that you're going to Australia?
Oft.
Let's spin that lucky flat tyre of destiny.
Here we go. Come on, Brisbane.
It's Auburn.
Auburn.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful. By the sea.
So what's happening in Auburn then, Paul? Are you going to visit someone?
We don't like to talk about it. It's
What's happening?
It's a show. In Auburn, it's called Still Gone, and myself, Mark and Jane will be talking through our careers such as they were. But what I can exclusively reveal, folks, not only do we have dry ice, we also have lasers and jetpacks.
Oh, and when are you in Oban then with this alleged show?
That would be in the Corran Halls on the 19th of March 2021.
Fantastic.
Tickets are on sale now.
The three of you are doing a show.
They're still going, Cole.
Very interesting. Well, I'm feeling up for a geography lesson then. I'd like to come and see your show, and if I'm going to go to Oban, for example, I'd like one of Marco Polo's geography lessons.
Again, that noise.
This week was brought to you by...
Well, the population of Oban is 8,575.
But in the summer, it rises to...
25,000? 10,
yeah. 12, 13 something.
But Mark Cox has it.
Huh?
25,000.
Wow.
In the summer.
Yeah. I tell you what's interesting about Oban. Well, there are various things interesting about Oban. The last woman to be hung...
I get a text from Paul Riley warning me not to do this one.
That's me. I've got nothing left.
I was going to add on about a thing there, but you can.
No, you carry on, Mark.
So the last woman to be hung in Scotland was from the town of Oban. Her name was Susan Newell. She was born in Oban and she was to move to Glasgow, to the suburb of Glasgow called Coatbridge, where she was to be accused of murdering a 13-year-old boy, but it was all circumstantial. She appeared nervous when the boy's body was found, and she was apparently quite violent. She had to batter her husband, etc., etc. But she was from Oban, and she moved to Coatbridge, and she was hung.
Hanged.
Yeah, thank you, Jane.
She was hanged in Glasgow by Ellis, who was quite well known for hanging people. Might be bad getting hung in Glasgow for her, etc., etc., but have you ever been in the CityLink bus for Oban? To Glasgow.
Yes.
Roasting hot or big squiggly roads. Oh.
I've just Googled that Susan Newell, and you're right enough. She was the last woman to be hanged in Scotland. She pled insanity, and it was over the murder of a paper boy. And apparently, it's unconfirmed, the front page of the paper that he was selling that night was Big Artichokes 2 for a pound at Asda.
Oh, there we are.
We just don't know.
Yeah, and that boy haunts the number 13 bus from Glasgow to Camelton. And every time it passes through Oban, he goes, ooh!
Oban is the seafood capital of Scotland. Oban in Gaelic means... And get we guess?
It's the little bay.
You. Little bay.
Oban holds, just in case Paul says this, Oban holds the world record for the longest strip the willow, my very favourite dance at a wedding. In July 2011, 2,000 people stretched round the harbour.
And my favourite porn movie.
I don't know if it's still there, but I was very impressed in the 90s. There was a health food shop in Oban called Oban Sesame.
Oh, nice.
Lovely.
Now, in keeping with our theme of luck, I have a story of bad luck from Oban and a story of good luck from Oban.
Oofed.
Bad luck first. In 2011, on Guy Fawkes Night, a computer glitch... ensured the evening went off with a bang as £6,000 worth of fireworks were ignited simultaneously, thus ruining the display that should have lasted 30 minutes.
But what a display. That it'd have been like Disneyland.
Is there no historical amphitheatre in Oban?
Aye, at the top of the hill.
Uh-huh. Well, the top of the hill's a folly.
A folly. They have concerts there, don't they?
Aye. But it was a Bronze Age settlement as well. Not the top of the hill, but Oban was a Bronze Age settlement. Good luck in Oban. Mull shepherdess Rhoda Munro has a croft at Fanmore and looks after 400 ewes on Gometra. She found a 25-foot upturned boat on the shore at Camas on her way to work on Friday, March the 13th. The boat's Danish makers knew it had gone missing. It had slipped off a freight boat in rough sea going from Denmark to Greenland. But because insurers had already paid out for it, she was told the boat, worth £48,000, was hers.
Nice.
Wow.
Friday the 13th, she finds a £48,000 boat.
Wow. And keeps it. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
Good for her.
Yeah, but like, you would, what would you do? Yeah, you might not know what to do with the boat. You could sell it.
She's keeping it for private use because she obviously transports her sheep on a boat to the island and such like, but she's not using it for them. She's using it as a special boat. But apparently the motor is going to cost her 20 grand. That was March 13th this year.
Good for her.
And Jane, once again, is quiet.
I had 5 Oban facts.
But the bottom line is here, we look forward to seeing you at the new dawn on the 21st of March.
We could also go on the 19th of March if you want.
Yeah, I'll be there on the 21st as well, just, you know. But yeah, but the show's actually on the 19th of March. Where is it, Paul, exactly? In Oban, every performing show?
Corin Hall's in Oban, and the tickets are on sale now, competitively priced. We're talking dry ice, we're talking jetpacks, we're talking lasers, folks.
Well, so mind, we did that show up in Oban, and in fact, it was, we were going over on the ferry to Harris. What is Harris?
Well, if you're going from Oban, you'd be going to Mull.
I don't think we did go to Mull. I'm sure. Where was it in Oban? Where was it? Was it Oban? And we went out for a tea, came out.
Where are the waltzers in Oban? Where are the waltzers in Oban?
No, leave it right. I could be in the wrong place, so David will correct me if I'm wrong. It was you, me and Astrid, I can't remember who else, and we came out and it was the most magical thunderstorm I think I've ever seen, and we walked up the hill to the B&B and we got the ferry in the morning.
That was actually Tarbert, and it was the Victoria Hotel, and we walked up to the B&B, and that's when you and Astrid dropped some jewellery behind a sink or something in...
Well, they were lovely. They gave us the keys, said they were going on holiday. They said, use the place, do what you like, make some breakfast, and just put the keys back through the letterbox. And then where it was, the sink was boxed in. It was stupid that they had a big gap at the back of the sink. Yes. And Astrid and I dropped just about everything that we owned that was worth anything, mainly lipsticks, jewellery, all that, down the gap, and had to leave it and put the keys back through the letterbox.
Is that, you know, just a wee warning there to anybody that has a bed and breakfast or a flat or anything? When you say to actors, just use the place, well, hell scud it into you as far as...
Yeah.
For nothing but trouble. And I would stay away from them.
I've walked into the room shared by Jane and Astrid when I think hair dye had exploded up a wall.
Oh, was that? That was a terrible thing. Red hair dye. It was like blood. It was like we'd committed a murder.
We've got a relevant question.
What?
Yep. From Rebecca. And Rebecca says, do you think luck comes naturally or do you think it's made through events?
I would go made through events because... does it come natural? I don't know.
Some people generally have a lucky life and they are lucky. And some people, through no fault of their own, but sometimes people just do have bad luck in life. I think what you would agree is that in life, lucky people aren't lazy. You know, there's a wee coincidence for you. Folk that are lucky work really hard, usually.
You just look at me here, for example.
Lucky Mark Cox from the East End of Glasgow.
Lucky dog.
I think it's a combination of both interests in that.
Everyone said what they think, and I would refer Rebecca back to my previous comments about, you know, luck is no such thing. You spot coincidence and you decide it's good luck or bad luck because you don't take notice of the times when it's not coincidence.
Or is luck just an opportunity? We don't know.
I was at this, it was an after dinner thing, and I won a size 8 underskirt. Now, I've never worn an underskirt, and I've never been a size 8, and it was used. So somebody'd obviously taken it off, wrapped it up, and put that in as a prize, which was bizarre. Even worse was that night, somebody had to bid at an auction. This man that was running it, he was going to come to your house and teach you how to cook a meal. And not one person put a bid in. So he stands at the front going, I'll come to your house, I'll bring the ingredients, I'll teach you, and everybody heads down.
Oh, God.
That was the most uncomfortable, embarrassing thing.
It was
thing.
The worst night of my life, I'll tell you.
Jane, was that raffle held beside the waltzers? If you win an underskirt, you're going to frame the ticket, right?
What disturbs me is, how did you know it was used? Was it a stained underskirt?
There was no label on it for a start. It was a crushed...
Property of Agnes.
Yeah, just an underskirt wrapped up.
Simon asks, how much rehearsal goes into an episode of Still Game?
Nine.
Well, what we do is we rehearse, record, is what they call it, and so you run the scene maybe once, twice, and then the camera positions are sorted out, and then we just shoot the thing. As time went on, we were so comfortable with each other. Everybody knew what we were going to do and when it was going to happen and stuff like that, and so that became kind of secondary. It was just about the cameras and the lighting people, just to get their stuff up and running, you know.
You would always run it with each other, like at lunch or whatever.
Oh, aye. Yeah.
One more question. It's a Still Game kid question, because that's why people listen to this, because they love you in Still Game. One Darren, in fact, said that he loves Still Game.
That's nice, Darren.
So this is Mrs. Stiles Hayes, who's a regular. I just realised, having read her Twitter feed, that I suspect the Stiles bit is because she's a massive Harry Styles fan.
Yeah, it is, I think.
So I thought I'd throw in there to you, Mrs. Stiles Hayes, that I actually was the fight coordinator on Harry's last pop video.
Oofed.
Oofed. She says, what would be your funniest joke from Still Game? I quite like the idea. You do these characters all the time, and the three of you are very funny people, you like to laugh, but was there anything you did that really tickled you, that really was unbearably funny to do?
Actually, to be fair, quite a lot of things over the years. And it's not what you do yourself, it's watching other people.
Yeah.
Both you boys and all the cast, actually, there's been things that I thought, that's brilliant, that's really funny, it's really clever. The writing at times was just absolutely fantastic. So I think between the writing and the performances of people,
I think when you see it for the first time and you're in the scene, and you just go, wow, that's amazing work, mm-hmm. absolutely brilliant. Do you know what I mean? And you haven't read, because you're no in it, you don't read the pages you're no in. That's a secret.
Some of the pages you are in.
Indeed. Do you remember there was a night scene where we were wearing night goggles or whatever they're called? There was one visual gag that came out of that, and it wasn't obviously scripted because you couldn't, but we made it up. I think those are the wee nuggets for me, I would say.
Yeah. I have to say, I wasn't very much part of Still Game, but one of my favourite things that made me laugh the most was Gene McCarry doing that lovely dive behind the bar of the Klansman, which we rehearsed and set as a stunt, but she worked at it very hard. But when I saw it, it's hilarious.
Yeah, and I remember, I don't even know if I was in that scene, but I remember that when she dives for the, it's hilarious. I love that.
The visuals are good. I think visuals are always very surprising when there's no, I think that's funny what you say. But actually, there's lots of the stuff out with that. There really is.
Yeah, like kicking your leg off.
Aye.
Visually, just looks lovely.
It was great fun. To be honest, that's the one everybody talks about in terms of when, you know, taxi drivers or whatever. That's the one they all talk about. That's the most visited. It's in the hit parade.
Well, that was delightful. Gene McCarry, come on. I mean, this is going to be beautiful.
Well, that's it. That's number 13 over. I wish you all good luck, good health, and good friends. Until we speak again. It is I, Jane McCarry.
It is I, Paul Riley.
It is I, Marcus Coxus.
It is I, Adolphus. I can't say Adolphus Hitler. It is I, David Goodall.
That's it. Bye. That's it.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Three Down One Across is an Osprey production. Luckily, episode 13 was recorded remotely under Murphy's Law. Shit happens. When life gives you lemons, dig out the tequila. It was produced at Soundsmooth Facilities.